I saved him from the assassins. I protected him. I'm a powerful allomancer. Why then do I feel so helpless? So alone. She walked forward, bare feet silent as she stepped up to Ellen's bed. He did not wake. She stood for a long moment, just looking at him peaceful in his slumber. Orsure growled quietly. Vin spun. A figure stood on the balcony, straight-backed and black, a near silhouette even to her tin-enhanced eyes. Mist fell before him, pooling on the floor, spreading out like an ethereal moss.
"Zane," she whispered. "He is not safe, Vin," he said, stepping slowly into the room, pushing a wave of mist before him. She looked back at Elland. "He never will be. I came to tell you that there is a traitor in your midst." Vin looked up.
"Who?"
she asked. "The man Demu," Zane said. "He contacted my father a short time before the assassination attempt, offering to open the gates and give up the city."
Vin frowned.
"That makes no sense."
Zane stepped forward.
"Set's work, Vin. He is a snake, even among High Lords. I don't know how he bribed away one of your own men, but I do know that Demu tried to provoke my father to attack the city during the voting."
Vin paused. If Straff had attacked at that moment, it would have reinforced the impression that he had sent the assassins in the first place.
"Elland and Penrod were supposed to die," Zane said. "With the assembly in chaos, Set could have taken charge. He could have led his forces, along with your own, against Straff's attacking army. He would have become the savior who protected Luthadel against the tyranny of an invader."
Vin stood quietly. Just because Zane said it didn't mean it was true. Yet her investigations whispered that Demu was the traitor. She'd recognized the assassin at the assembly, and he had been from Set's retinue, so she knew that Zane was telling the truth about at least one thing. Plus, Set had precedent for sending allomancer assassins. He had sent the ones months ago, when Vin had used the last of her atium. Zane had saved her life during that fight. She clenched her fists, frustration biting at her chest.
"If he's right, then Demu is dead, and an enemy Chandra has been in the palace, spending his days just steps away from Elland. Even if Zane lies, we still have a tyrant inside the city, another without. A force of Kolos salivating over the people. And Elland doesn't need me. Because there's nothing I can do." "I sense your frustration," Zane whispered, stepping up beside Elland's bed, looking down at his sleeping brother. "You keep listening to him. You want to protect him, but he won't let you."
Zane looked up, meeting her eyes. She saw an implication in them. There was something she could do. The thing a part of her had wanted to do from the beginning. The thing she'd been trained to do.
"Set almost killed the man you love," Zane said. "Your Elland does as he wishes. Well, let us do as you wish."
He looked into her eyes.
"We have been someone else's knives for too long. Let's show Set why he should fear us."
Her fury, her frustration at the siege, yearned to do as Zane suggested. Yet she wavered, her thoughts in chaos. She had killed well, just a short time before, and it had terrified her. Yet, Elland could take risks, insane risks, traveling into an army of Kolos on his own. It almost felt like a betrayal. She had worked so hard to protect him, straining herself, exposing herself. Then just a few days later, he wandered alone into a camp full of monsters. She gritted her teeth. Part of her whispered that if Elland wouldn't be reasonable and stay out of danger, she'd just have to go and make sure the threats against him were removed.
"Let's go," she whispered. Zane nodded. "Realize this," he said. "We can't just assassinate him. Another warlord will take his place and take his armies. We have to attack hard. We have to hit that army so soundly that whoever takes over for Set is so frightened that he withdraws." Vin paused, looking away from him, nails biting into her own palms. "Tell me," he said, stepping closer to her, "what would your Kelsier tell you to do?" The answer was simple. Kelsier would never have gotten into this situation. He had been a hard man, a man with little tolerance for any who threatened those he loved. Set and Straff wouldn't have lasted a single night at Luthadel without feeling Kelsier's knife. There was a part of her that had always been awed by his powerful utilitarian brutality. "There are two ways to stay safe," Reen's voice whispered to her. "Either be so quiet and harmless that people ignore you, or be so dangerous that they're terrified of you." She met Zane's eyes and nodded. He smiled, then moved over and jumped out the window. "Osir," she whispered once he was gone. "My Atium." The dog paused, then padded up to her, his shoulders splitting. "Mistress," he said slowly, "do not do this." She glanced at Elend. She couldn't protect him from everything, but she could do something. She took the Atium from Orsier. Her hands no longer shook. She felt cold. "Set has threatened all that I love," she whispered. "He will soon know that there is something in this world more deadly than his assassins, something more powerful than his army, something more terrifying than the Lord Ruler himself. And I am coming for him." Mist duty, they called it. Every soldier had to take his turn, standing in the dark with a sputtering torch. Someone had to watch, had to stare into those shifting, deceitful mists, and wonder if anything was out there, watching. Wellen knew there was. He knew it, but he never spoke. Soldiers laughed at such superstitions. They had to go out in the mists. They were used to it. They knew better than to fear it. Supposedly. "Hey," Jarlu said, stepping up to the edge of the wall. "Wells, do you see something out there?" Of course he didn't. They stood with several dozen others on the perimeter of Keep Hasting, watching from the outer keep wall, a low fortification, perhaps 15 feet tall, that surrounded the grounds. Their job was to look for anything suspicious in the mists. Suspicious. That was the word they used. It was all suspicious. It was mist. That shifting darkness, that void made of chaos and hatred. Wellen had never trusted it. They were out there, he knew. Something moved in the darkness. Wellen stepped back, staring into the void, his heart beginning to flutter, hands beginning to sweat as he raised his spear. "Yeah," Jarlu said, squinting. "I swear I see..." It came as Wellen had always known it would. Like a thousand gnats on a hot day. Like a hail of arrows shot by an entire army. Coins sprayed across the battlements. A wall of shimmering death. Hundreds of trails zipping through the mists. Metal rang against stone, and men cried out in pain. Wellen stepped back, raising his spear as Jarlu yelled the alarm. Jarlu died halfway through the call, a coin snapping through his mouth, throwing out a chip of tooth as it proceeded at the back of his head. Jarlu collapsed and Wellen stumbled away from the corpse, knowing that it was too late to run. The coins stopped. Silence in the air. Men lay dying or groaning at his feet. Then they came. Two dark shadows of death in the night. Ravens in the mist. They flew over Wellen with a rustle of black cloth. And they left him behind,
alone amid the corpses of what had once been a squad of 40 men. Vin landed in a crouch, bare feet on the cool stone cobbles of the Hastings courtyard. Zane landed upright, standing, as always, with his towering air of self-confidence. Pewter blazed within her, giving her muscles the taut energy of a thousand excited moments. She easily ignored the pain of her wounded side. Her sole bead of atium rested in her stomach, but she didn't use it. Not yet. Not unless she was right and Set proved to be Mistborn. "We'll go from the bottom up," Zane said. Vin nodded. The central tower of Keep Hastings was so many stories high, and they couldn't know which one Set was on. If they started low, he wouldn't be able to escape. Besides, going up would be more difficult. The energy in Vin's limbs cried for release. She'd waited, remained coiled for far too long. She was tired of weakness, tired of being restrained. She had spent months as a knife, held immobile at someone's throat. It was time to cut. The two dashed forward. Torches began to light around them as Set's men, those who camped in the courtyard, awakened to the alarm. Tents unfurled and collapsed, men yelling in surprise, looking for the army that assailed them. They could only wish that they were so lucky. Vin jumped straight up into the air and Zane spun, throwing a bag of coins around him. Hundreds of bits of copper sparkled in the air beneath her. A peasant's fortune. Vin landed with a rustle and they both pushed, their power throwing the coins outward. The torch-sparkled missiles ripped through the camp, dropping surprised, drowsy men. Vin and Zane continued toward the central tower. A squad of soldiers had formed up at the tower's front. They still seemed disoriented, confused, and sleepy, but they were armed. Armed with metal armor and steel weapons. A choice that, had they actually been facing an enemy army, would have been wise. Zane and Vin slid into the midst of the soldiers. Zane tossed a single coin into the air between them. Vin reached out and pushed against it, feeling Zane's weight as he also pushed against it. Braced against each other, they both pushed in opposite directions, throwing their weight against the breastplates of the soldiers to either side. With flared pewter, holding each other steady, their pushes scattered the soldiers as if they had been slapped by enormous hands. Spears and swords twisted in the night, clattering to the cobbles. Breastplates towed bodies away. Vin extinguished her steel as she felt Zane's weight come off the coin. The sparkling bit of metal bounced to the ground between them, and Zane turned, throwing up his hand toward the single soldier who remained standing directly between Zane and the keep doors. A squad of soldiers raced up behind Zane, but they suddenly halted as he pushed against them, then sent the transfer of weight directly into the lone soldier. The unfortunate man crashed backward into the keep doors. Bones crunched. The doors flung open as the soldier burst into the room beyond. Zane ducked through the open doorway and Vin moved smoothly behind him, her bare feet leaving rough cobbles and falling on smooth marble instead. Soldiers waited inside. These didn't wear armor, and they carried large wooden shields to block coins. They were armed with staves or obsidian swords. Haze killers, men trained specifically to fight allomancers. There were perhaps 50 of them. "Now it begins in earnest," Vin thought, leaping into the air and pushing off the door's hinges. Zane led by pushing on the same man he'd used to break open the doors, throwing the corpse toward a group of haze killers. As the soldier crashed into them, Vin landed amid a second group. She spun on the floor, whipping out her legs and flaring pewter, tripping a good 4 men. As the others tried to strike, she pushed downward against a coin in her pouch, ripping it free and throwing herself upward. She spun in the air, catching a falling staff discarded by a tripped soldier. Obsidian cracked against the white marble where she had been. Vin came down with her own weapon and struck, attacking faster than anyone should be able to, hitting ears, chins, and throats. Skulls cracked. Bones broke. She was barely breathing hard when she found all 10 of her opponents down.
10 men. Didn't Kelsier once tell me he had trouble with half a dozen haze killers?
No time to think. A large group of soldiers charged her. She yelled and jumped toward them, throwing her staff into the face of the first man she met. The others raised their shields, surprised, but Vin whipped out a pair of obsidian daggers as she landed. She rammed them into the thighs of two men before her, then spun past them, attacking flesh where she saw it. An attack flickered from the corner of her eye, and she snapped up an arm, blocking the wooden staff as it came for her head. The wood cracked, and she took the man down with a wide sweep of the dagger, nearly beheading him. She jumped backward as the others moved in, braced herself, then yanked on the armored corpse Zane had used before, pulling it toward her. Shields did little good against a missile so large. Vin smashed the corpse into her opponents, sweeping them before her. To the side she could see the remnants of the haze killers who had attacked Zane. Zane stood among them, a black pillar before the fallen, arms outstretched. He met her eyes, then nodded toward the rear of the chamber. Vin ignored the few remaining haze killers. She pushed against the corpse and sent herself sliding across the floor. Zane jumped up, pushing back, shattering his way through a window and into the mists. Vin quickly did a check of the back rooms. No set. She turned and took down a straggling haze killer as she ducked into the lift shaft. She needed no elevator. She shot straight up on a pushed coin, bursting out onto the third floor. Zane would take the second. Vin landed quietly on the marble floor, hearing footsteps come down a stairwell beside her. She recognized this large, open room. It was the chamber where she and Elend had met Set for dinner. It was now empty, even the table removed, but she recognized the circular perimeter of stained glass windows. Haze killers burst from the kitchen room. Dozens. There must be another stairwell back there, Vin thought as she darted toward the stairwell beside her. Dozens more were coming out there, however, and the two groups moved to surround her. 50-1 must have seemed like good odds for the men, and they charged confidently. She glanced at the open kitchen doors and saw no Set beyond. This floor was clear. Set certainly brought a lot of haze killers, she thought, backing quietly to the center of the room. Save for the stairwell, kitchens, and pillars, the room was mostly surrounded in arched stained glass windows. He planned for my attack. Or he tried to. Vin ducked down as the waves of men surrounded her. She turned her head up, eyes closed, and burned Duralumin. Then she pulled. Stained glass windows, set in metal frames inside their arches, exploded around the room. She felt the metal frames burst inward, twisting on themselves before her awesome power. She imagined twinkling slivers of multicolored glass in the air. She heard men scream as glass and metal hit them, embedding in their flesh. Only the outer layer of men would die from the blast. Vin opened her eyes and jumped as a dozen dueling canes fell around her. She passed through a hail of attacks. Some hit. It didn't matter. She couldn't feel pain at the moment. She pushed against a broken metal frame, throwing herself over the heads of soldiers, landing outside the large circle of attackers. The outer line of men was down, impaled by glass shards and twisted metal frames. Vin raised a hand and bowed her head. Duralumin and steel. She pushed. The world lurched. Vin shot out into the mists through a broken window as she pushed against the line of corpses impaled by metal frames. The bodies were thrown away from her, smashing into the men who were still alive in the center. Dead, dying, and unharmed were swept from the room, pushed out the window opposite Vin. Bodies twisted in the mists, 50 men thrown into the night, leaving the room empty save for trails of blood and discarded bits of glass. Vin downed a vial of metals as the mists rushed around her. Then she pulled herself back toward the keep, using a window on the fourth floor. As she approached, a corpse crashed through the window, falling out into the night. She caught a glimpse of Zane disappearing out another window on the opposite side. This level was clear. Lights burned on the fifth floor. They probably could have come here first, but that wasn't the plan. Zane was right. They didn't just need to kill Set. They needed to terrify his entire army. Vin pushed against the same corpse that Zane had thrown out the window, using its metal armor as an anchor. It shot down at an angle, passing just inside a broken window, and Vin soared upward in an angle away from the building. A quick pull directed her back to the building once she reached the elevation she needed. She landed at a window on the fifth floor. Vin grasped the stone sill, heart thumping, breaths coming in deep gasps. Sweat made her face cold in the winter breeze, despite the heat burning within her. She gulped, eyes wide, and flared her pewter. Mistborn. She shattered the window with a slap. The soldiers that waited beyond jumped backward, spinning. One wore a metal belt buckle. He died first. The other 20 barely knew how to react as the buckle buzzed through their ranks, twisting between Vin's pushes and pulls. They had been trained, instructed, and perhaps even tested against Allomancers. But they had never fought Vin. Men screamed and fell, Vin ripping through their ranks with only the buckle as a weapon. Before the force of her pewter, tin, steel, and iron, the possible use of Atium seemed an incredible waste. Even without it, she was a terrible weapon. One that, until this moment, even she hadn't understood. Mistborn. The last man fell. Vin stood among them, feeling a numbing sense of satisfaction. She let the belt buckle slip from her fingers. It hit carpet. She stood in a room that wasn't unadorned as the rest of the building had been. There was furniture here, and there were some minor decorations. Perhaps Ellen's clearing crews hadn't gotten this far before Set's arrival, or perhaps he'd simply brought some of his own comforts. Behind her was the stairwell. In front of her was a fine wooden wall set with a door, the inner apartments. Vin stepped forward quietly, mist cloak rustling as she pulled four lamps off the brackets behind her. They whipped forward, and she sidestepped, letting them crash into the wall. Fire blossomed across splattered oil, billowing across the wall, the force of the lamps breaking the door on its hinges. She raised a hand, pushing it fully open. Fire dripped around her as she stepped into the room beyond. The richly decorated chamber was quiet and eerily empty, save for two figures. Set sat in a simple wooden chair, bearded, sloppily dressed and looking very, very tired. Set's young son stepped in between Set and Vin. The boy held a dueling cane. "So which one is Mistborn?" The boy swung. Vin caught the weapon, then shoved the boy to the side. He crashed into the wooden wall, then slumped to the ground. Vin eyed him.
"Leave Gnorden alone, woman," Set said. "Do what you came to do."
Vin turned toward the nobleman. She remembered her frustration, her rage, her cool, icy anger. She stepped forward and grabbed Set by the front of his suit.
"Fight me," she said, and tossed him backward.
He slammed against the back wall, then slumped to the ground. Vin prepared her Atium, but he did not rise. He simply rolled to the side, coughing. Vin walked over, pulling him up by one arm. He balled a fist, trying to strike her, but he was pathetically weak. She let the blows bounce off her side.
"Fight me," she commanded, tossing him to the side.
He tumbled across the floor, head hitting hard, and came to rest against the burning wall, a trickle of blood running from his brow. He didn't rise. Vin gritted her teeth, striding forward.
"Leave him alone."
The boy, Gnorden, stumbled in front of Set, raising his dueling cane in a wavering hand. Vin paused, cocking her head. The boy's brow was streaked with sweat, and he was unsteady on his feet. She looked into his eyes and saw absolute terror therein. This boy was no Mistborn. Yet he held his ground. Pathetically, hopelessly, he stood before the body of the fallen Set.
"Stand aside, son," Set said in a tired voice. "There is nothing you can do here."
The boy started to shake, then began to weep. Tears, Vin thought, feeling an oddly surreal feeling cloud her mind. She reached up, surprised to find wet streaks on her own cheeks.
"You have no Mistborn," she whispered.
Set had struggled to a half-reclining position, and he looked into her eyes.
"No Allomancers faced us this night," she said. "You used them all on the assassination attempt in the Assembly Hall?"
"The only Allomancers I had I sent against you months ago," Set said with a sigh. "They were all I ever had. My only hope of killing you. Even if they weren't from my family. My whole line has been corrupted by Skaab blood. Orianne is the only Allomancer to be born to us for centuries."
"You came to Luthadel?"
"Because Straff would have come for me eventually," Set said. "My best chance, lass, was to kill you early on. That's why I sent them all against you. Failing that, I knew I had to try and take this damn city and its Atium so I could buy myself some Allomancers. Didn't work."
"You could have just offered us an alliance,"
Set chuckled, pulling himself up to a sitting position.
"It doesn't work that way in real politics. You take or you get taken. Besides, I've always been a gambling man."
He looked up at her, meeting her eyes.
"Do what you came to," he repeated.
Vin shivered. She couldn't feel her tears. She could barely feel anything.
"Why? Why can't I make sense of anything anymore?"
The room began to shake. Vin spun, looking toward the back wall. The wood there quivered and spasmed like a dying animal. Nails began to pop, ripping backward through the paneling. Then the entire wall burst away from Vin. Burning boards, splinters, nails, and shingles sprayed in the air, flying around a man in black. Zane stood sideways in the room beyond, death strewn at his feet, hands at his sides. Red streamed from the tips of his fingers, running in a steady drip. He looked up through the burning remnants of the wall, smiling. Then he stepped toward Set's room.
"No!"
Vin said, dashing at him. Zane paused, surprised. He stepped to the side, easily dodging Vin, walking toward Set and the boy.
"Zane, leave them,"
Vin said, turning toward him, pushing herself in a skid across the room. She reached for his arm. The black fabric glistened wet with blood that was only his own. Zane dodged. He turned toward her, curious. She reached for him, but he moved out of the way with supernatural ease, outstepping her like a master swordsman facing a young boy.
"Atium," Vin thought. "He probably burned it this entire time. But he didn't need it to fight these men. They didn't have a chance against us anyway."
"Please,"
she asked.
"Leave them."
Zane turned toward Set, who sat expectant. The boy was at his side, trying to pull his father away. Zane looked back at her, head cocked.
"Please,"
Vin repeated. Zane frowned.
"He still controls you, then," he said, sounding disappointed. "I thought, maybe, if you could fight and see just how powerful you were, you'd shake yourself free of Ellen's grip. I guess I was wrong."
Then he turned his back on Set and walked out through the hole he had made. Vin followed quietly, feet crunching splinters of wood as she slowly withdrew, leaving a broken keep, shattered army, and humiliated lord behind.
"But must not even a madman rely on his own mind, his own experience, rather than that of others?"
44. In the cold calm of morning, Breeze watched a very disheartening sight. Set's army withdrawing. Breeze shivered, breath puffing as he turned toward Clubs. Most people wouldn't have been able to read beyond the sneer on the squat general's face. But Breeze saw more. He saw the tension in the taut skin around Clubs's eyes. He noticed the way that Clubs tapped his finger against the frosty stone wall. Clubs was not a nervous man. The motions meant something.
"This is it, then?" Breeze asked quietly.
Clubs nodded. Breeze couldn't see it. There were still two armies out there. It was still a standoff. Yet he trusted Clubs's assessment, or rather he trusted his own knowledge of people enough to trust his assessment of Clubs. The general knew something he didn't.
"Kindly explain," Breeze said.
"This will end when Straff figures it out," Clubs said.
"Figures what out?"
"Those Koloss will do his job for him if he lets them."
Breeze paused.
"Straff doesn't really care about the people in the city. He just wants to take it for the Atium, and for the symbolic victory."
"If Straff pulls back," Breeze said. "Those Koloss will attack," Clubs said with a nod. "They'll slaughter everyone they find and generally make rubble out of the city. Then Straff can come back and find his Atium once the Koloss are done."
"Assuming they leave, my dear man."
Clubs shrugged.
"Either way, he's better off. Straff will face one weakened enemy instead of two strong ones."
Breeze felt a chill and pulled his cloak closer.
"You say that all so straightforwardly."
"We were dead the moment that first army got here, Breeze," Clubs said. "We're just good at stalling."
"Why in the name of the Lord Ruler do I spend my time with this man?" Breeze thought. "He's nothing more than a pessimistic doomsayer."
And yet Breeze knew people. This time Clubs wasn't exaggerating.
"Bloody hell," Breeze muttered.
Clubs just nodded, leaning against the wall and looking out at the disappearing army.
300 men, Ham said, standing in Alan's study. "Or at least, that's what our scouts say."
"That's not as bad as I'd feared," Ellen said. They stood in Ellen's study, the only other occupant being Spook, who sat lounging beside the table.
"El," Ham said. "Set only had 1,000 men with him here in Lutherdell. That means during Vin's attack, Set took 30% casualties in less than 10 minutes. On a battlefield, most armies will break if they take 30 or 40% casualties in the course of an entire day's fighting."
"Oh," Ellen said, frowning. Ham shook his head, sitting down, pouring himself something to drink.
"I don't get it, El. Why'd she attack him?"
"She's loony," Spook said.
Ellen opened his mouth to counter that comment, but found it difficult to explain his feelings.
"I'm not sure why she did it," he finally admitted. "She did mention that she didn't believe those assassins at the assembly came from my father."
Ham shrugged. He looked haggard. This wasn't his element, dealing with armies and worrying about the fate of kingdoms. He preferred to concern himself with smaller spheres.
"Of course," Ellen thought, "I'd just prefer to be in my chair reading quietly. We do what we must."
"Any news of her yet?" Ellen asked. Spook shook his head.
"Uncle Grumpy has the scouts searching the city, but so far nothing."
"If Vin doesn't want to be found," Ham said.
Ellen began to pace. He couldn't keep still. He was beginning to think he must look like Jastes, wandering in circles, running his hand through his hair.
"Be firm," he told himself. "You can afford to seem worried, but you mustn't ever seem uncertain."
He continued to pace, though he slowed his step, and he didn't voice his concerns to Ham or Spook. What if Vin was wounded? What if Set had killed her? Their scouts had seen very little of the attack the night before. Vin had definitely been involved, and there were conflicting reports that said she'd been fighting another Mistborn. She had left the keep with one of the top floors in flames, and for some reason she had left Set alive. Since then, nobody had seen her. Elland closed his eyes, pausing as he leaned a hand against the stone wall.
"I've been ignoring her lately. I've helped the city, but what good will it do to save Luthadel if I lose her? It's almost like I don't know her anymore. Or did I ever know her in the first place?"
It felt wrong to not have her with him. He had come to rely on her simple bluntness. He needed her genuine realism, her sheer sense of concreteness, to keep him grounded. He needed to hold her, so that he could know that there was something more important than theories and concepts. He loved her.
"I don't know, Al," Ham finally said. "I never thought that Vin would be a liability, but she had a hard youth. I remember once she exploded at the crew for little reason, yelling and screaming about her childhood. I don't know that she's completely stable."
Elland opened his eyes. "She's stable, Ham," he said firmly, "and she's more capable than any of us." Ham frowned.
"But she had a good reason for attacking Set," Elland said. "I trust her."
Ham and Spook exchanged glances, and Spook just shrugged.
"It's more than last night, El," Ham said. "Something's not right with that girl. Not just mentally, either."
"What do you mean?" Elland asked.
"Remember the attack on the assembly?" Ham said. "You told me you saw her get hit square on by a thug's staff."
"And?" Elland asked.
"It laid her out for 3 full days.
Ham shook his head.
"Her complete collection of wounds. Getting hit in the side, the shoulder wound, nearly being choked to death. Those altogether laid her out for a couple of days. But if she'd really gotten hit that hard by a thug, she shouldn't have been out for days, Elland. She should have been out for weeks. Maybe longer. She certainly shouldn't have escaped without broken ribs."
"She was burning pewter," Elland said.
"Presumably so was the thug."
Elland paused.
"You see," Ham said, "if both were flaring pewter, then they should have balanced each other out. That leaves Vin, a girl who can't weigh more than 100 pounds, getting clobbered full-on by a trained soldier with 3 times her weight. She shrugged it off with barely a few days' rest."
"Vin's special," Elland finally said.
"I won't argue with that," Ham said. "But she's also hiding things from us. Who was that other Mistborn? Some of the reports make it sound like they were working together."
"She said there was another Mistborn in the city," Elland thought. "Zane, Straff's messenger. She hasn't mentioned him in a very long while."
Ham rubbed his forehead.
"This is all falling apart around us, El." "Kelsia could have kept it together," Spook mumbled. "When he was here, even our failures were part of his plan."
"The survivor is dead," Elland said. "I never knew him, but I've listened to enough about him to learn one thing. He didn't give in to despair." Ham smiled.
"That much is true. He was laughing and joking the day after we lost an entire army to a miscalculation. Arrogant bastard."
"Callous," Spook said.
"No," Ham said, reaching for his cup. "I used to think that. Now, I just think he was determined. Kel always looked toward tomorrow, no matter what the consequences."
"Well, we have to do the same," Elland said. "Set is gone. Penrod let him leave. We can't change that fact. But we do have information on the Kolos army."
"Oh, about that," Spook said, reaching into his pouch.
He tossed something to the table.
"You're right. They're the same."
The coin rolled to a stop, and Elland picked it up. He could see where Spook had scraped it with a knife, peeling off the gold paint to reveal the dense hardwood beneath. It was a poor representation of a boxing. It was little wonder that the fakes had been so easy to pick out. Only a fool would try to pass them off as real. A fool, or a Kolos. Nobody was certain how some of Jasti's fake boxings had worked their way up to Luthadel. Perhaps he had tried giving them to peasants or beggars in his home dominance. Either way, it was fairly apparent what he was doing. He'd needed an army, and had needed cash. He'd fabricated the one to get the other. Only Kolos would have fallen for such a ploy.
"I don't get it," Ham said as Elland passed him the coin. "How come the Kolos have suddenly decided to take money? The Lord Ruler never paid them."
Elland paused, thinking back to his experience with the camp. "We are humans. We will live in your city." "The Kolos are changing, Ham," Elland said. "Or maybe we never really understood them in the first place. Either way, we need to be strong. This isn't over yet."
"It would be easier to be strong if I knew our Mistborn wasn't insane. She didn't even discuss this with us."
"I know," Elland said. Ham rose, shaking his head.
"There's a reason the Great Houses were always so reluctant to use their Mistborn against each other. Things just got a whole lot more dangerous. If Set does have a Mistborn, and he decides to retaliate..."
"I know," Elland said again, bidding the two farewell. Ham waved to Spook, and the two of them left, off to check with Breeze and Clubs. They all act so glum, Elland thought, leaving his rooms to find something to eat. It's like they think we're doomed because of one setback. But Set's withdrawal is a good thing. One of our enemies is leaving, and there are still two armies out there. Jasti's one attack, if doing so exposes him to Straff, and Straff himself is too scared of Vin to do anything. In fact, her attack on Set will only make my father more frightened. Maybe that's why she did it.
"Your Majesty," a voice whispered.
Elland spun, searching the hallway.
"Your Majesty," said a short figure in the shadows.
"Or Seer."
"I think I found her."
Elland didn't bring anyone with him, save for a few guards. He didn't want to explain to Ham and the others how he'd gotten his information. Vin still insisted on keeping Orsure secret. "Ham's right about one thing," Elland thought as his carriage pulled to a stop. "She is hiding things. She does it all the time." But that didn't stop him from trusting her. He nodded to Orsure, and they left the carriage. Elland waved his guards back as he approached a dilapidated building. It had probably once been a poor merchant's shop, a place run by extremely low nobility, selling meager necessities to ska workers in exchange for food tokens, which could in turn be exchanged for money from the Lord Ruler. The building was in a sector that Ellen's fuel collection crews hadn't reached yet. It was obvious, however, that it hadn't seen a lot of use lately. It had been ransacked long ago, and the ash coating the floor was a good 4 inches deep. A small trail of footprints led toward a back stairwell.
"What is this place?" Ellen asked with a frown.
Orsier shrugged a pair of dog's shoulders.
"Then how did you know she was here?" "I followed her last night, Your Majesty," Orsier said. "I saw the general direction she went. After that, it was simply a process of careful searching."
Elland frowned. "That still must have taken some pretty mean tracking abilities, Chandra."
"These bones have unusually keen senses."
Elland nodded. The stairwell led up into a long hallway with several rooms at the ends. Elland began to walk down the hallway, then paused. To one side, a panel on the wall had been slid back, revealing a small cubby. He could hear movement within.
"Vin?"
he asked, poking his head into the cubby. There was a small room hidden behind the wall, and Vin sat on the far side. The room, more of a nook, was only a few feet across, and even Vin wouldn't have been able to stand up in it. She didn't respond to him. She simply sat, leaning against the far wall, head turned away from him. Elland crawled inside the small chamber, getting ash on his knees.
It was barely large enough for him to enter without bumping into her.
Vin, are you all right?
She sat, twisting something between her fingers, and she was looking at the wall, looking through a narrow hole. Ellen could see sunlight shining through.
It's a peephole, he realized, to watch the street below. This isn't a shop. It's a thieving hideout. Or it was.
I used to think Cayman was a terrible man, Vin said quietly. Ellen paused, on hands and knees. Finally, he settled back into a cramped seated position. At least Vin didn't look hurt.
Cayman, he asked. Your old crew leader before Kelsier?
Vin nodded. She turned away from the slit, sitting with her arms around her knees.
He beat people. He killed those who disagreed with him. Even among street thugs, he was brutal.
Ellen frowned.
But, Vin said quietly, I doubt he killed as many people during his entire life as I killed last night.
Ellen closed his eyes. Then he opened them and shuffled a bit closer, laying a hand on Vin's shoulder.
Those were enemy soldiers, Vin.
I was like a child in a room full of bugs, Vin whispered.
He could finally see what was in her fingers. It was her earring, the simple bronze stud that she always wore. She looked down at it, twisting it between her fingers.
Did I ever tell you how I got this? She asked.
He shook his head.
My mother gave it to me, she said. I don't remember it happening. Rain told me about it. My mother... She heard voices sometimes. She killed my baby sister, slaughtered her, and that same day she gave me this, one of her own earrings, as if choosing me over my sister. A punishment for one, a twisted present for another.
Vin shook her head.
My entire life has been death, Ellen. Death of my sister, the death of Rean. Crew members dead around me, Kelsier falling to the Lord Ruler, then my own spear in the Lord Ruler's chest. I try to protect and tell myself that I'm escaping it all. And then, I do something like I did last night.
Not certain what else to do, Ellen pulled her close. She was stiff, however.
You had a good reason for what you did, he said.
No, I didn't, Vin said. I just wanted to hurt them. I wanted to scare them and make them leave you alone. It sounds childish, but it's how I felt.
It's not childish, Vin, Ellen said. It was good strategy. You gave our enemies a show of force. You frightened away one of our major opponents, and now my father will be even more afraid to attack. You've bought us more time.
Bought it with the lives of hundreds of men.
Enemy soldiers who marched into our city, Ellen said. Men who were protecting a tyrant who oppresses his people.
That's the same rationale Kelsier used, Vin said quietly, when he killed noblemen and their guards. He said they were upholding the final empire, so they deserved to die. He frightened me.
Ellen didn't know what to say to that.
It was like he thought himself a god, Vin whispered. Taking life, giving life where he saw fit. I don't want to be like him, Ellen, but everything seems to be pushing me in that direction. You're not like him, he wanted to say.
It was true, but the words wouldn't come out. They rang hollow to him. Instead, he pulled Vin close, her shoulder up against his chest, head beneath his chin.
I wish I knew the right things to say, Vin, he whispered.
Seeing you like this makes every protective instinct inside of me twist. I want to make it better. I want to fix everything. But I don't know how. Tell me what to do. Just tell me how I can help. She resisted his embrace a little at first, but then sighed quietly and slid her arms around him, holding him tightly.
You can't help with this, she said softly. I have to do it alone. There are decisions I have to make.
He nodded. You'll make the right ones, Vin.
You don't even know what I'm deciding.
It doesn't matter, he said. I know I can't help. I couldn't even hold on to my own throne. You're 10 times as capable as I am. She squeezed his arm.
Don't say things like that. Please?
He frowned at the tension in her voice, then nodded. All right. But either way, I trust you, Vin. Make your decisions. I'll support you.
She nodded, relaxing a bit beneath his arms. I think, she said, I think I have to leave Luthadel.
Leave? And go where?
North, she said. To Terrace.
Ellen sat back, resting against the wooden wall.
Leave, he thought with a twisting feeling. Is this what I've earned by being so distracted lately? Have I lost her?
And yet he'd just told her that he'd support her decisions. If you feel you have to go, Vin, he found himself saying, then you should do so.
If I were to leave, would you go with me?
Now? Vin nodded, head rubbing his chest.
No,
he finally said. I couldn't leave Luthadel. Not with those armies still out there.
But the city rejected you.
I know, he said, sighing. But I can't leave them, Vin. They rejected me, but I won't abandon them.
Vin nodded again, and something told him this was the answer she had expected.
Ellen smiled. We're a mess, aren't we?
Hopeless,
she said softly, sighing as she finally pulled away from him. She seemed so tired. Outside the room, Ellen could hear footsteps. Orsure appeared a moment later, poking his head into the hidden chamber.
Your guards are growing restless, Your Majesty, he said to Elland. They will soon come looking for you.
Elland nodded, shuffling over to the exit. Once in the hallway, he offered a hand to help Vin out. She took the hand, crawling out, then stood and dusted off her clothing, her typical shirt and trousers.
Will she ever go back to dresses now? He wondered.
Elland, she said, fishing in a pocket. Here. You can spend this if you want.
She opened up her hand, dropping a bead into his hand.
Atium?
He asked incredulously.
Where did you get it?
From a friend, she said.
And you didn't burn it last night?
Elland asked.
When you were fighting all those soldiers?
No, Vin said. I swallowed it, but I didn't end up needing it, so I forced it back up.
Lord Ruler, Ellen thought. I didn't even consider that she didn't have atium. What could she have done if she'd burned that bit?
He looked up at her.
Some reports say that there's another Mistborn in the city.
There is. Zane.
Ellen dropped the bead back into her hand.
Then you keep this. You might need it to fight him.
I doubt that, Vin said quietly.
Keep it anyway, Ellen said. This is worth a small fortune, but we'd need a very large fortune to make any difference now. Besides, who would buy it? If I used it to bribe Straff or Set, They'd only become more certain I'm holding ATM against them.
Vin nodded, then glanced at Orsir.
Keep this, she said, handing the bead toward him. It's big enough that another Allomancer could pull it off of me if he wanted.
I will guard it with my life, mistress, Orsir said, his shoulders splitting open to make room for the bit of metal.
Vin turned to join Elend as they walked down the steps, moving to meet with the guards below.
I know what I have memorized. I know what is now repeated by the other world bringers.
45.
The Hero of Ages won't be Terrace, Tyndall said, scribbling a note at the bottom of their list.
We knew that already, Sazed said, from the logbook.
Yes, Tyndall said, but Elendi's account was only a reference, a third-hand mention of the effects of a prophecy. I found someone quoting the prophecy itself.
Truly?
Sazed asked, excited.
Where?
The biography of Helenshin, Tyndall said. One of the last survivors of the Council of Chrenium.
Write it for me, Sazed said, scooting his chair a bit closer to hers.
He had to blink a few times as she wrote, his head clouding for a moment from fatigue.
Stay alert, he told himself. There isn't much time left. Not much at all.
Tyndall was doing a little better than he, but her wakefulness was obviously beginning to run out, for she was starting to droop. He'd taken a quick nap during the night, rolled up on her floor, but she had carried on. As far as he could tell, she'd been awake for over a week straight. There was much talk of Rabzin during those days, Tyndall wrote. Some said he would come to fight the Conqueror. Others said he was the Conqueror. Elenshin didn't make his thoughts on the matter known to me. The Rabzin is said to be he who is not of his people, yet fulfills all of their wishes. If this is the case, then perhaps the Conqueror is the one. He is said to have been Helenium. She stopped there. Sazed frowned, reading the words again. Quan's last testimony, the rubbing Sazed had taken at the Conventicle of Saren, had proven useful in more than one way. It had provided a key. It wasn't until years later that I became convinced that he was the Hero of Ages, Quan had written. Hero of Ages, the one called Rabzin in Helenium, the Anam Neser. The rubbing was a means of translation, not between languages, but between synonyms. It made sense that there would be other names for the Hero of Ages. A figure so important, so surrounded by lore, would have many titles. Yet so much had been lost from those days. The Rabzin and the Anam Neser were both mythological figures vaguely familiar to Sazed, but they were only two among hosts. Until the discovery of the rubbing, there had been no way to connect their names to the Hero of Ages. Now Tyndall and he could search their metal minds with open eyes. Perhaps in the past, Sazed had read this very passage from Helenshin's biography. He had at least skimmed many of the older records, searching for religious references. Yet he would never have been able to realize that the passage was referring to the Hero of Ages, a figure from Terrace lore that the Hleni people had renamed into their own tongue.
Yes, he said slowly. This is good, Tyndall. Very good.
He reached over, laying his hand on hers.
Perhaps, she said, though it tells us nothing new. Ah, but the wording might be important, I think, Sazed said. Religions are often very careful with their writings. Especially prophecies, Tyndall said, frowning just a bit.
She was not fond of anything that smacked of superstition or soothsaying.
I would have thought, Sazed noted, that you would no longer have this prejudice concerning our current enterprise. I gather information, Sazed, she said, because of what it says of people, and because of what the past can teach us. However, there is a reason I took to studying history as opposed to theology. I don't approve of perpetuating lies. Is that what you think I do when I teach of religions? He asked in amusement.
Tyndall looked toward him.
A bit, she admitted. How can you teach the people to look toward the gods of the dead, Sazed? Those religions did their people little good, and their prophecies are now dust. Religions are an expression of hope, Sazed said. That hope gives people strength. Then you don't believe, Tyndall asked. You just give the people something to trust, something to delude themselves? I would not call it so. Then you think the gods you teach of do exist? I think that they deserved to be remembered. And their prophecies, Tyndall said. I see scholarly value in what we do. The bringing to light of facts from the past could give us information about our current problems. Yet this soothsaying for the future is, at its core, foolishness. I would not say that, Sazed said. Religions are promises. Promises that there is something watching over us, guiding us. Prophecies, therefore, are natural extensions of the hopes and desires of the people. Not foolishness at all. So your interest is purely academic, Tyndall said. I wouldn't say that.
Tyndall studied him, watching his eyes. She frowned slowly.
You believe it, don't you? She asked. You believe that this girl is the hero of ages? I have not yet decided, Sazed said. How can you even consider such a thing, Sazed? Tyndall asked. Don't you see? Hope is a good thing, a wonderful thing. But you must have hope in something appropriate. If you perpetuate the dreams of the past, then you stifle your own dreams of the future. What if the past dreams are worthy of being remembered?
Tyndall shook her head.
Look at the odds, Sazed. What are the chances we would end up where we are, studying this rubbing, in the very same household as the hero of ages?
Odds are irrelevant when a foretelling is involved.
Tyndall closed her eyes.
Sazed, I think religion is a good thing, and belief is a good thing. But it is foolishness to look for guidance in a few vague phrases. Look at what happened last time someone assumed they had found this hero. The Lord Ruler, the final empire, was the result.
Still, I will hope. If you did not believe the prophecies, then why work so hard to discover information about the deepness and the hero?
It's simple, Tyndall said. We are obviously facing a danger that has come before. A recurring problem, like a plague that plays itself out only to return again centuries later. The ancient people knew of this danger, and had information about it. That information naturally broke down and became legends, prophecies, and even religions. There will be, then, clues to our situation, hidden in the past. This is not a matter of soothsaying, but of research.
Sazed lay his hand on hers.
I think, perhaps, that this is something we cannot agree upon. Come, let us return to our studies. We must use the time we have left.
We should be all right, Tyndall said, sighing and reaching to tuck a bit of hair back into her bun. Apparently your hero scared off Lord Set last night. The maid who brought breakfast was speaking of it.
I know of the event, Sazed said.
Then things are growing better for Luthadel.
Yes, Sazed said. Perhaps.
She frowned.
You seem hesitant.
I do not know, he said, glancing down. I do not feel that Set's departure is a good thing, Tyndall. Something is very wrong. We need to be finished with these studies.
Tyndall cocked her head.
How soon?
We should try to be done tonight, I think, Sazed said, glancing toward the pile of unbound sheets they had stacked on the table.
That stack contained all the notes, ideas, and connections that they'd made during their furious bout of study. It was a book of sorts, a guidebook that told of the hero of ages and the deepness. It was a good document, incredible even, considering the time that'd been given. It was not comprehensive. It was, however, probably the most important thing he'd ever written, even if he wasn't certain why.
"Says it," Tyndall asked, frowning. "What is this?"
She reached to the stack of papers, pulling out a sheet that was slightly askew. As she held it up, Sazed was shocked to see that a chunk from the bottom right corner had been torn off.
"Did you do this?" she asked.
"No," Sazed said. He accepted the paper. It was one of the transcriptions of the rubbing. The tear had removed the last sentence or so. There was no sign of the missing piece. Sazed looked up, meeting Tyndall's confused gaze. She turned, shuffling through a stack of papers to the side. She pulled out another copy of the transcription and held it up. Sazed felt a chill. The corner was missing.
"I referenced this yesterday," Tyndall said quietly. "I haven't left the room save for a few minutes since then, and you were always here."
"Did you leave last night?" Sazed asked. "To visit the privy while I slept?"
"Perhaps. I don't remember."
Sazed sat for a moment, staring at the page. The tear was eerily similar in shape to the one from their main stack. Tyndall, apparently thinking the same thing, laid it over its companion. It matched perfectly. Even the smallest ridges in the tears were identical. Both of them sat, staring. Then they burst into motion, riffling through their stacks of pages. Sazed had four copies of the transcription. All were missing the same exact chunk.
"Sazed," Tyndall said, her voice shaking just a bit.
She held up a sheet of paper, one that had only half of the transcription on it, ending near the middle of the page. A hole had been torn directly in the middle of the page, removing the exact same sentence.
"The rubbing,"
Tyndall said, but Sazed was already moving. He left his chair, rushing to the trunk where he stored his metal mines. He fumbled with the key at his neck, pulling it off and unlocking the trunk. He threw it open, removed the rubbing, then unfolded it delicately on the ground. He withdrew his fingers suddenly, feeling almost as if he'd been bitten, as he saw the tear at the bottom. The same sentence, removed.
"How is this possible?" Tyndall whispered. "How could someone know so much of our work? So much of us?"
"And yet," Sazed said, "how could they know so little of our abilities?
I have the entire transcription stored in my metal mind. I can remember it right now." "What does the missing sentence say?" "Alendi must not reach the Well of Ascension. He must not be allowed to take the power for himself." "Why remove this sentence?" Tyndall asked.
Sazed stared at the rubbing.
"This seems impossible."
A noise sounded at the window. Sazed spun, reaching reflexively into his pewter mind and increasing his strength. His muscles swelled, his robe growing tight. The shutters swung open. Vin crouched on the sill. She paused as she saw Sazed and Tyndall, who had also apparently tapped strength, growing to have almost masculine bulk.
"Did I do something wrong?" Vin asked.
Sazed smiled, releasing his pewter mind.
"No, child," he said. "You simply startled us."
He met Tyndall's eye, and she began to gather up the ripped pieces of paper. Sazed folded up the rubbing. They would discuss it further later.
"Have you seen anyone spending too much time around my room, Lady Vin?" Sazed asked as he replaced the rubbing. "Any strangers, or even any particular guards?"
"No," Vin said, climbing into the room. She walked barefoot, as usual, and she didn't wear her mist cloak. She rarely did in the daytime. If she had fought the night before, she had changed clothing, for there were no stains of blood, or even sweat on this outfit.
"Do you want me to watch for anyone suspicious?" she asked.
"Yes, please," Sazed said, locking the chest. We fear that someone has been riffling through our work, though why they would wish to do so is confusing.
Vin nodded, remaining where she was as Sazed returned to his seat. She regarded him and Tyndall for a moment.
I need to talk to you, Sazed, Vin said. I can spare a few moments, I think, Sazed said. But I must warn you that my studies are very pressing.
Vin nodded, then glanced at Tyndall. Finally she sighed, rising.
I guess I will go and see about lunch, then.
Vin relaxed slightly as the door closed. Then she moved over to the table, sitting down in Tyndall's chair, pulling up her legs before her on the wooden seat.
Sazed, she asked, how do you know if you're in love?
Sazed blinked.
I do not think I am one to speak on this topic, Lady Vin. I know very little about it.
You always say things like that, Vin said, but really you're an expert on just about everything. Sazed chuckled.
In this case, I assure you that my insecurity is heartfelt, Lady Vin.
Still, you've got to know something.
A bit, perhaps, Sazed said. Tell me, how do you feel when you are with young Lord Venture? I want him to hold me,
Vin said quietly, turning to the side, looking out the window.
I want him to talk to me, even if I don't understand what he's saying. Anything to keep him there, with me. I want to be better because of him.
That seems like a very good sign, Lady Vin.
But...
Vin glanced down.
I'm not good for him, Sazed. He's scared of me.
Scared?
Well, he's at least uncomfortable with me. I saw the look in his eyes when he saw me fighting on the day of the assembly attack. He stumbled away from me, Sazed, horrified.